On today's episode of The Good Word, Fred Katz from The Athletic joins us to talk about Coach Tibbs and the Red Hot Knicks, who might have another trade in the offing, and LeBron carrying the Lakers over the Warriors in the game of the year. All that and much more in today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports and the host of this show. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is Monday. It is for some franchises and other sports, it is a Super Bowl Monday. For others, it is we just gave up a 17-point halftime lead in the NFC title game, and y'all wonder why I quit them. But today, we are joined proudly from Charlotte by my man, Fred Katz. Fred is a New York Knicks beat writer for The Athletic. He is also the host of the Katz and Shoot podcast on Patreon. And it's fitting that after the Lions collapse, we are talking to the New York Knicks beat writers because the New York Knicks, they are almost just as anemic as the Detroit Lions, but they have hope. They have hope like the Detroit Lions had hope. And we're going to talk a lot about the Knicks. But first, Fred, I want to say, A, thanks for joining us. Secondly, did you stay up for the double overtime game on Saturday night on ABC? Or did you fall asleep? Like, did you trooper through the Lakers and Golden State in that game of the year classic that you got to see?
I did not trooper through it. I fell asleep. And I caught up in it on Sunday. Because you know what I found? I found that is now my move of being, if I were like 28, oh man, I would have been up for like 2 hours after the game. And I would have been so hyped and so ready to go. And now, nothing.
Fred.
Can't do it.
Fred, how old are you? Fred, you just made me sound really old because I remember 28. I remember 28. I thought you were 28.
I'm 34.
That's close enough. You know, and it's funny, you know, because sports writers, give y'all a secret. Sometimes we fall asleep and then we'll wake up at ungodly hours and watch the game and look at the stats and everything else. And sometimes we'll stay up all night, right? It's almost like a prerequisite for being a sports writer is having a terrible sleeping pattern. Another prerequisite for being a sports writer, is I feel like it's a two Americas thing, and I'm going to ask Fred this. I feel like for some of us, there's like certain music albums that you have to listen to, like to be a NBA writer. Like there's just one, right? For Black writers, I'm not sure exactly which one it is. It might be something like, "Hey, what do you think about The Chronic or Doggy Style?" Like where do you sit on, you know, Kanye West's discography before he went crazy? I feel like for the other half, every one of you guys listens to Born to Run. Is that like your organizational ethos? Is that like Bruce Spring? Is that the one Bruce Springsteen album that every white sports writer feels like they must listen to? Because I feel like you guys reference it all the time, and I feel like I have no idea what the hell y'all talking about.
Every white sports writer has to like Bruce Springsteen. It is a prerequisite. If you don't, you can't get the job. It's how it works, especially if you're from the Northeast. Yeah, I love Born to Run. It's not my favorite Springsteen album. The Rising is my favorite Springsteen album, but it's a great album. It's one of the best.
Well, how about this?
See, I'm also a Springsteen fan of a different generation where like The Rising comes out when I'm like 13 years old, 14 years old. So like, that's part of my, like, that's new and still in, like, my formidable years of listening to music, and it's just come out. So, like, that's my album. Mine is The Rising. But I feel like if you're talking about, like, you know, somebody who's got 15, 20 years on me, then Born to Run is probably the one.
Okay, so I don't feel so bad. I didn't make that up, right? Okay, as long as I didn't make that up, like, people...
Born to Run is an amazing album. It's a great album.
See,
we're just stereotyping me right off the top.
Not stereotyping you, just putting you in a box. That's all. Just putting you in a box. But for those of you, I won't say that Golden State Lakers was game of the year, but I will say it felt like an event. And it was something that people had to stay up for, especially in the immediate sort of limelight of Denver, Philadelphia, where Joel Embiid, again, did not play against Nikola Jokic. He hadn't played there since 2019. He was a late scratch. A bunch of Twitter, of course, had fun with it. And when you remove that and then you have LeBron and Steph, clearly both of them in the twilight of their career able to produce great theater like that on call. There were multiple times that I thought Golden State had the game lost. Then multiple times I thought Golden State had the game won. And LeBron was fantastic. And producing what he's able to produce. Like Fred, I know he can't do that in the playoffs. But for a game or two, like in a series, if they actually get there. Same for Steph. Like asking them to do that 4 or 5 games is a bit much. But doing this, it's almost like being on Broadway. And you're finding like that great actor who's been on stage or who's been in movies and an A-lister going on stage and just doing it in front of you. And you're like, wow, this is really cool.
I mean, he's starting the All-Star game because he's LeBron James. And that third forward spot in the West, I thought was really hard. To be clear, yes. I didn't have a vote, but I go through it. But you know you're going to have KD and you know you're going to have Jokic. And then you have that third front court spot. And it could be LeBron. It could be Kawhi.
Yep.
It could be Anthony Davis. And you could put any of those guys on your ballot. And I have absolutely no problem with it. Those guys are all incredible choices. LeBron ends up getting it, which didn't surprise me because he's LeBron. But like the year he's having right now is insane. And you look at the Lakers' offense, and it really struggles. Their half-court offense really struggles. It shouldn't be the level that it's at, especially considering he and AD have been healthy all year. It shouldn't be in the bottom 10 in points per possession. It just shouldn't. But the fact that he's still putting up this production, the fact that he's taking 5.5 threes a game and hitting a higher percentage of them that he has in 11 years, the fact that his efficiency is still through the roof. Like what he goes 36, 20 and 12
mm-hmm,
in that game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know what the craziest one to me is? Not 36, not 20, not 12. The craziest to me is that LeBron is of the generation where LeBron probably did love Born to Run. And he played 48 minutes in that game, dude. In a January game, he played 48 minutes and looked great. It's crazy to me, not that LeBron is still really good. It's crazy to me that LeBron is still this great every night. And I actually don't totally agree with what you said before. With that LeBron, you can't just rely on him to do this every night in the playoffs. I think that's exactly what the Lakers are doing. I think they are very much relying on him to do this every night in the playoffs, if they're able to even get there. But I think this team is built in a way to where, like, look, they're trying to get help, but they haven't done it yet. Maybe they bring in another ball handler. Maybe they bring in another shooter. Maybe they bring in both. But right now, that's what the burden is. The burden on him is, yeah, LeBron, do everything. In order for us to be successful, you have to do everything on offense.
Well, A, that's probably why they are where they are in the Western Conference, if you're so LeBron dependent, and you just said it. Bottom 10 team in offense, when LeBron has virtually played every game, Anthony Davis is having a career year pretty much on both sides of the floor, as much as you can expect from him being in year 12 and LeBron being in year 21, and yet and still the Lakers are where they are. If LeBron, put it like this, Fred, if the first round was best of five, it hasn't been best of five since 2003. But when you consider the play-in, when you consider in-season tournament, all that stuff, I've long advocated first round should be best of five. If you see Steph Curry in a best of five, you see LeBron in a best of five, you are scared out of your bleeping minds, because all it takes is for one of those guys to go on a bender. All it takes is for one of those guys to go on a quick heater, and you are in big-time trouble, Minnesota, Oklahoma City, right? Even though I don't think those two teams will be at the top of the Western Conference when all of this is over, I actually think the Clippers, even if they don't want to finish first, I feel like they might they're probably going to finish first in the Western Conference because they have figured some stuff out. But that is not why Fred Katz is here. Fred is here because the New York Knicks have won 6 in a row. They waxed the Miami Heat. They're bullies. They have waxed the Miami Heat at Madison Square Garden on Saturday afternoon, 12-2 in January. 12-2 since trading for OG Anunoby and getting Quickly and RJ Barrett out of there. They are bludgeoning opponents. Like, I just looked at the numbers yesterday, Fred. They're holding opponents to 43 from the field, 31 from three. Granted, they haven't played a motley crew of great shooting teams. Houston, Washington, Toronto, Brooklyn, Denver, Miami. Denver, Miami, top half teams in terms of shooting. The other four are not. But they are in fourth place in the Eastern Conference, and they are not that far from possibly catching Philadelphia at third. Give me the overall outlook of this Knicks team to date. A, are we looking at them as a team that can still bludgeon you with the rules? Because it looks like you kind of can. Like, they're outscoring opponents by 17 points this month. And it looks like the OG Anunoby fit has been even better than people could have possibly expected.
It's been as incredible as you could possibly ask for real. I mean, first of all, let me just say, I say all of this with the caveat that as of the time we're recording this, we still don't know the long-term diagnosis on Julius Randle. We know he has a dislocated right shoulder. We don't know if that means he's going to be out for, you know, X amount of days, X amount of weeks, X amount of months, the whole year into next year. We just don't know. We don't know the full diagnosis. So we have to just say that right off the bat, because obviously right. Randall's presence affects everything in terms of their long-term outlook. But with Anunoby there, you know, there are really few perimeter defenders in the league. Tibbs called him a defense unto himself. There are really few perimeter defenders in the league who are a defense unto themselves. You know, Kawhi, when he's at his best, is a defense unto himself. And by the way, I don't think that was just like a coach propping up his dude. I think what we've seen over the last month is he very much conclusively is a defense unto himself. It's not like the Knicks were the sixth best defense in the league and then they bring in OG and now they're the best. The Knicks lost Mitchell Robinson in early December for ankle surgery. He's still out. After Mitchell Robinson went down, and Mitch was having a all-defense caliber season, easily the best season of his career, he had completely figured it out. The foul rate was lower than ever. The blocks were lower than ever. And I had talked to him about that, and he was like, I just don't care about blocks anymore. He used to try to block everything. He was this jumpy, young, hyper-athletic big. And he openly says, he's like, I don't care about blocks anymore. They don't matter. What I care about is just being in the right position. And just he actually doesn't say anything. What he does is to describe his effect that he wants. Is what he does is he takes both of his hands and puts them on either shoulder and he shivers like this. And that's what he says he wants everybody to feel whenever they come into the lane. And he says he doesn't care about blocks. He cares about that. And it's an incredible change in mentality for him. And it really showed where, my goodness, he had become this phenomenal defensive anchor everywhere. He's not just a rim protector, pick and roll defender. And you lose him. And the Knicks are playing like a bottom 10 defense. I mean, from the time that Mitchell Robinson is out to about the 3.5-4 week stretch to where they get Anunoby, that team is in the bottom 10 in the league in points allowed per possession over that period. And they bring in Anunoby, and now they're first by a lot. And they have played, for the most part, not good offenses. However, they are destroying those offenses. And when they have played good teams, like the Heat, who they just beat by 16, like the Nuggets, who they just beat by 38, like the 76ers, who they beat in Philadelphia when everyone was healthy by 36. Like the Timberwolves, who they beat by a very large, they beat them by 6, but it was like one of those, you know, up double digits the whole game and the Wolves,
right.
You know, fake comeback at the end sort of things. It was, they're playing fantastic basketball. Their physicality stands out so much. I saw a tweet the other day, which was really funny, which is that it was so true. It was everyone in the NBA scores 150 points every night and then comes to Madison Square Garden and gets beaten with metal baseball bats for 2 hours.
I saw that. Yeah. I did see that. I saw that tweet.
And it's exactly what's happening. I mean, teams dread playing them. And part of it is because of Tibbs, because mm-hmm. that's just what a Tibbs team wants. But part of it is also that it's sort of a chicken or egg thing where, like, because they have Tibbs, they are self-aware. They know, well, if we don't get players who already have this mentality, Tibbs is either going to wear on them, or Tibbs is just going to be like, nope, I'm out on him. He's buried now. So they have to go out, and every player they get has to be like OG Anunoby, has to be like Josh Hart, where he's just going to throw his body every which way, no matter what, and be completely reckless. Has to be like Jalen Brunson, who is this undersized, small point guard, who there are two guys on the team who take charges during scrimmages in practice. And one of them is Jalen Brunson. And for those listening who don't know, your all-star is not supposed to take charges in practice. That is really bad idea. But Jalen refuses to do anything else. And it just sets this tone for the team. Dante DiVincenzo's like that. I mean, basically, Quentin Grimes is like that. Miles McBride is like that. Isaiah Hartenstein is like that. It's this ridiculously physical, hard-playing group naturally. And then you add the fact that Tom Thibodeau is leading them, and you're just like, oh my goodness, this is a monstrously intimidating roster. And I don't know if they're going to win one playoff series, two playoff series, whatever it is, but I can tell you whoever plays them in a playoff series is going to thoroughly not enjoy it.
Now, see, you have delved into two places that I want to go. So I'm going to give you the choice. Do you want to talk about Tibbs, or do you want to dig into the numbers and then talk about Tibbs?
Let's dig into the numbers.
Okay. So I looked this up, and I'm not a huge numbers, but I just wanted to see in January how it came up. Because three-man units, to me, kind of tell a lot. That it's kind of like that sweet spot of you're not going to play five-man units, but so many minutes, and four-man units can be really wonky depending on who that fifth guy is. Looked at the three-man units, and I was astonished. So in 285 minutes, this month alone, this is just in January, so you got Randle, OG, Jalen Brunson, 285 minutes plus 154. You're killing opponents. Those are your three high-minute guys that you have and three usage guys that you have on the floor, plus 154 points. You're killing teams. Then you got OG, Hartenstein, Jalen Brunson, 149 in 254 minutes. And then here's the really fun one. You put Josh Hart in there. Josh Hart, OG, Brunson, only 125 minutes together. So you're only playing 10 minutes a game so far, approximately, right? Plus 136. And that, to me, Fred, is a big one when you consider playoff basketball. And people will say, why? Because you're going to have to play OG and Hart against Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Two wings. Like, you got two defenders on two wings. You can't hide your best score. You can't switch off. You're going to have to go against one of those rough and rugged defenders no matter what team you have, right? If you have two scorers like Boston, there's no hiding. If you're Jimmy Butler in Miami, like, he's going to be facing one of those guys on the floor every time he's there, and you can't really hunt those switches. Am I wrong to look at it that way? Is that as telling, or is that a mere function of we're playing Houston, Washington, Toronto, Brooklyn, Denver, and then Miami?
No, I think it's working. I think when you have Hart on the floor, it's just that we talk about the physicality, the defensive physicality when you have Hart on the floor. I mean, let's compare it to last year's team. Last year's team, Josh Hart, a lot of the time, was their number one option in terms of guarding the other team's best player.
Mm-hmm.
Especially once you have Mitchell Robinson back, you could put together lineups where Hart is arguably their fourth best defender. And a lot of those minutes that you mentioned with the Brunson, OG, Hart lineups, a lot of those minutes are with Dante DiVincenzo there too, because what Tibbs will do is he'll close with Hartenstein, those three plus Hartenstein and DiVincenzo. And what you end up getting in those lineups is the Knicks play a low risk brand of defense, as every single Tibbs defense always has for the most part, which is he wants his guys to adhere to team defense principles first, second, and third. Like, that is what you have to do. And so if you jump into passing lanes to try to get a steal and then you give up something on the back end because you gambled for that steal and now a guy has an open lane to the hoop to cut or to drive or whatever, Tibbs is going to sit you down every time. He hates that stuff. Your first responsibility is to the team defense and you have to be in the right place. And then if you're doing that and you're really good, then all of a sudden you can be disruptive if you want. And here's the thing. OG Anunoby, every once in a while, he'll take a chance. But you know what? He's so good. He's so great defensively that you allow it. You're like, you know what? Okay, I trust him. If he went for that, he didn't get it. He wouldn't have done it if he didn't think he couldn't do it. And he's such an unbelievably brilliant defender. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I understood how to read that ball more than OG Anunoby, right? It's not like a situation with like when I covered Russell Westbrook, when Russ would just go for every steal no matter what. And
there's a slight difference defensively between OG Anunoby and Russell Westbrook.
Yes. And you look at that lineup and you've got three guys in that lineup who are on the perimeter, incredible ball hawks who still play within their team's defensive principles. Josh Hart is so good in passing lanes. And DiVincenzo is sneakily having the best year of his career and is completely and utterly outplaying the contract that the Knicks gave him. He is hitting every single three. He's shooting 50-some-odd percent from the corners, well over 40% overall on the season from three. And defensively, he's been so good. And one of the things that the Anunoby trade does is it kind of knocks everybody down a peg, where previously DiVincenzo was kind of having to guard the other team's best perimeter player on a lot of nights. And it's not that he's a bad on-ball defender. He's not at all. But his strength is being an off-ball guy. He's a really good help defender. He's really good at coming over and being the guy who comes in doubles. He's really good at stunting at guys in the post. He's really good in passing lanes. And that's all of his strength. And now all of a sudden, you got Anunoby guarding the other night against Denver. You got Anunoby guarding Jamal Murray. And DiVincenzo can guard somebody else, and he can be the guy to jump at Jokic. And you can just have Anunoby shut down Jamal Murray for an entire game, and you can worry, and you could just have everybody else worry about Jokic. And it sets up this fantastic dynamic. The Hart plus minus numbers are ridiculous. Can I throw out another one to you, which is just completely and utterly insane, because we're talking about Ananobi's fit. And this is, Vinny, I keep waiting for this to come down. I keep waiting, and it's not happening. It's staying at this number every game, and it's obscene. Fill in the blank. I'm going to make you guess. I'm going to turn this around. It's your podcast. I'm going to make you guess.
All right.
This is according to Cleaning the Glass. Knicks are, OG Anunoby has played 495 minutes with the Knicks, not including garbage time. The Knicks are blank points per 100 possessions better when OG Anunoby's on the floor. I'm putting you on the spot on your own pod.
I hate you. I hate you for doing this because I wasn't prepared to play Family
I know.
Feud.
Well, no one's prepared for this. Just guess it. You're not going to be too high. I promise you won't. Say any number, you won't be too high. I didn't even know numbers went this high.
Really? Is that high?
Guess it. Just guess it. Give me a number. You're not going to be too high.
Okay, give me a range. Just.
No, just guess it. Guess it, and you're not going to be too high, and I'm going to tell you that it's higher. Just guess it.
I can't do it. Just tell me. I can't do it.
They're 41 points per 100 possessions better when OG's on the floor.
Oh, hell no. See, that's why the number I was thinking was like, I didn't even know that number could get that high.
It can't get that high. That's my point. Nikola Jokic is winning MVPs off of these numbers, and his team is like 20 points per 100 better when he's on the floor, and he's leading the league by like 8 points per 100. Like, it's insane. If you're at like 14, right, you're going to be second in the league to Jokic.
And that's amazing.
And he's at 40. They are 40 points per 100 possessions better. Their defense is 30.4 points per 100 possessions better when he is on the court. It is allowing an effective field goal percentage 16 percentage points less. They're getting way more turnovers when he's on the court, which is the exact dynamic I was just talking about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're actually giving up way more shots at the rim when he's on the court, which is really interesting. But the percentage at the rim is the lowest in the league. So nobody's scoring when they get to the rim, because what's happening is they're not giving up any threes because Ananobi's closing out on everybody.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And everybody's having to frantically put the ball on the floor. And then they drive into this collapsed paint because Tibbs defenses build their defenses from the paint out. And Isaiah Hartenstein has been fantastic protecting the rim as well. And Ananobi's right there with them when they drive. There's no one to kick to because you've got these guys like Hart and DiVincenzo who are fantastic in passing lanes. And you got guys throwing up frantic shots. So you're giving up more shots at the rim, way more shots at the rim when he's on the court. But you're giving up the lowest actual efficiency at the rim in the entire league. The foul rate is really low. You're not fouling. It is obscene what he's done to their defense and what their defense has been. And I don't think it's going to stay at this level because I keep waiting for it to come down. But the fact that it's even happened for 14 games is outrageous.
No, no, no. It's funny because you're transitioning me right to Tibbs in the conversation that I wanted to have about Tibbs. Because I have sat in a million different places on Tibbs in 15 years. I literally have, Fred. I don't know if you know my theory about coaches. I don't even know if John knows my theory about coaches, but here's my theory about coaches, or NBA coaches, rather. There's 5 to 7 good ones, 5 to 7 bad ones, and a bunch of dudes in the middle. And for a long time, early, I used to think that Tibbs was one of the best coaches. I've never thought that he was one of the worst. I used to just think he was a guy, like just a guy, not just a guy, but a guy in the middle who coached during a different time. Not like he coached in the 90s, but for those who don't understand, coaching in the NBA or the NBA in the early 2010s is a completely different NBA than now. And Tibbs completely, in my opinion, manipulated offenses having one shooter on the floor. You got one shooter on the floor. You know what Tibbs is going to do? He's going to ice the side pick and roll, and he's going to have defenders that can get to the one shooter. You're going to swing the ball to the one shooter, and that's all you have to worry about. And I felt like not just the Derrick Rose injury, but the league going to more shooting with what doomed Tibbs' defense, because now you couldn't swing your defense fast enough to the second shooter on the floor, to the guy that could actually put the ball down and drive past you. And I felt like that's where his team struggled, and he struggled to adjust. Silly me, because after, what, maybe one bad year in New York, he had that stint in Minnesota that did not go well, and I felt like that was a function of Tibbs as front office person screwing over Tibbs, the coach. But now he's found an organization that he can have his influence in the Knicks, because he and Leon Rose and World Wide West, they have, you know, they're part of the CAA conglomerate. They're like, you should put up a picture, a Death Row picture. You know what Death Row is? Like, yeah. Death Row Records? Okay, yeah. You're 34, but you're a different type of 34. You know what I mean? Like, you should have like Suge Knight, Tupac, Snoop Dogg, and Dr. Dre on a picture. We should like superimpose that and have Leon Rose, if Leon ever comes out of his cave, in World Wide West when he's not in a box with Michael Jordan and Derek Jeter and everybody at the national title game, and Tibbs. I don't know who the player would be. Maybe the player is Jalen Brunson. You know what I mean? But if we could superimpose that and turn that into like Death Row East, you know what I mean? Like, well, I mean, they're literally beating people up. You know what I mean? Like, it kind of works, right? But
it would work.
But back on topic. I think Tibbs has done a remarkable job still being Tibbs, right? Still grouchy, still grumpy, still demanding, but he's able to defensively, in a league that's no longer a defensive league, carve out a niche and an identity for his team and hold them to it. I wasn't sure how long this was going to work, and he's proven me all the way wrong.
Yeah, I mean, Lord knows they play hard. Like,
they play 82 playoff games.
You can't watch that team and think, well, this coach has lost this team, you know? And it's funny because you always heard about the Tibbs clock, you know, that eventually teams are going to be like, I can't, I'm worn out now. Can't do this anymore. Quit on him. And that was always the narrative around Tibbs. And it's just like, even last year, they get off to a very underwhelming start and they give up 140 points at home to Oklahoma City when Oklahoma City was not yet good. And they're 6-7 at the time. And the conversation around it is, oh man, is Tibbs in trouble? They just had this underwhelming second year in New York. Is this now like the Tibbs fall off that everyone's been talking about? And they come back and they get hot. They win a couple of road games. And then they totally fall off again. And they end up blowing this massive lead at home in the early December to Dallas. They fall to 10-13 on the season. Luka and Tim Hardaway both individually outscored the Knicks in the third quarter of that game in this massive comeback. And it was this humiliating loss for them. They fall to 10-13 and their defense was like 24th or something like that. And again, now it's like, if the Knicks lose this next game, who knows what happens to Tibbs there? Like it is that level. And all of a sudden they come back. Tibbs changes the rotations the next day. That's when Evan Fournier gets benched. They win the next day against Cleveland. They go on this ridiculously hot streak, end up winning 47 games. They destroy Cleveland in the first round of the playoffs. A team doesn't do that if it's quitting on its coach. That's literally the opposite of what you do if you quit on your coach. When your back's against the wall and you're like, all right, now we really fight. That's the opposite of quitting. That is having some gusto to you. So I'm with you. I think part of it is that the organization has made a very conscious decision to go out and get guys who fit this mold for the most part.
Yeah.
Every once in a while they go and they trade for Cam Reddish. And it reminds them, oh, right, there's a reason that we're doing this the way that we're doing this. Because they go and they trade for Cam Reddish, and then Cam completely falls out of favor with the coaching staff because that's not his style.
That's not that type of player.
Right. He's not Josh Hart. You know, Josh Hart will throw his body into anything. Like he's a maniac. I don't think Josh Hart would disagree at all if I say Josh is a crazy person. Like, I don't think he would disagree with that at all. And you look at the rest of this roster and there's just this immense physicality and passion on the roster. And Tibbs shows that off. I mean, Quentin Grimes cares so much about defense and is a very physical defender for his size. Miles McBride cares so much about defense and is now actually hitting his jump shots, which was really what the question was going to be when he entered the rotation. There was no doubt about him being a physical, ridiculously try-hard defender.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's actually given him something because he's hitting 40-some-odd percent of his threes on top of the fact that that dude just guards really, really hard at the point. And you've got all the other guys who I named already. You know, Isaiah Hartenstein has become this unbelievably physical center under him. And not that Hartenstein wasn't a good defender with the Clippers. I actually think he was quite underrated. If you look at the rim protection metrics, when he was with the Clippers, I think opponents shot 48% on layups and dunks when he was the closest defender that year with the Clippers, which is a phenomenal number.
Yeah.
But he's changed under Tibbs in terms of his physicality, being able to be physical without having a really high foul rate. That was a big thing for him. He's really honed his fouls. Really big deal. Now he's able to play starter minutes with Mitchell Robinson out. He's become this quality starting center, and he's done it in a totally more Tibbsy sort of way. He's been very adaptable in terms of being able to screen. He's a better screener now, being able to screen and roll and not necessarily be the guy who you give the ball to at the top of the offense and facilitate, which I think he could still do. And I think there's a good argument to be made that Knicks should use that more. But these guys are adaptable players who are just kind of figuring out ways to make it work, even if some of them aren't the best shooters or whatever else. And like, there's a very dogged culture in that locker room. And I think part of it is because of them playing for Tibbs. And I also think part of it is it's just like, this is who they are. Like, Josh, it's not like Josh Hart when he played in Portland or when he played with the Lakers or when he played in New Orleans. It's not like Josh Hart was this I don't give a crap kind of guy. He was diving into stands in all those places too, you know? So I think it's it's kind of a chicken or egg thing, but it's working. I mean, it's really working. They execute their schemes really well.
Yep.
That Denver game, oh, they were so unbelievable defensively on Jokic. That was some of the best defense I've seen on Jokic all year.
No, the rotations were on point. And I didn't see the whole game, but I saw like enough snippets where I was like, okay, they know where the next pass is going. And even if they don't know where the next pass is going defensively, they're getting there. Like normally Jokic catches you off guard because he's looking one way, you go that way, and then he throws something else and there's an open shot. Like shooting in the NBA is like a split second, y'all. Like you literally have a split second to get a shot off. With the Knicks, it's less than a split second, right? And I don't know if the Knicks are a championship team. I have zero clue about that because the Eastern Conference is really hard to handicap at this point. I'm not sure if Miami's done, right? Nobody knows what to think of the Milwaukee Bucks because of everything that's happened. And now you're bringing in Doc Rivers, and you got to see what that iteration looks like. The Boston Celtics are the most, you know, up and down team because of their variance with the three-point shot. They can blow you out or they can get blown out, right? It's so wonky and weird. And for the Knicks to sit where they are, I'm not sure where their championship prospects are. But Fred, I just want to zoom out for a quick second because we only got like another 10 minutes or so. For where they were 3 or 4 years ago, after the David Fizdale thing and everything else, then Steve Mills gets fired. And there's Scott Perry sort of there, but they had laid the groundwork a little bit. They had laid the groundwork a little bit there. And then you bring in Jalen Brunson. And that sort of starts to put things, you know what I mean? Put things together. Was this all by happenstance? Because nobody could have seen Jalen Brunson being this good for it. I didn't see Jalen Brunson be. I saw Jalen Brunson being a better version of himself than he was in Dallas. I didn't see him being, hey, y'all, we need to start him at point guard or start him at guard for the All-Star game good.
No, I definitely did not see him being, hey, start him at guard at the All-Star game good. I definitely didn't see that. I think anybody who said they were seeing that would probably be lying to you. And everybody close to Jalen says they did see that. The only person that I will say probably saw it, and I believe genuinely believed it, is Rick Brunson. I think Rick Brunson definitely believed he was going to do that. That's just about the only one that I'll give it to. And the Villanova guys were all with the Knicks now. Mm-hmm. Brian Archidiakono and Dante DiVincenzo and Josh Hart, they all say they saw it. But him taking this kind of leap as a scorer, it's funny, we've been talking about the Knicks, but we haven't really talked that much about the guy who's unquestionably their best player. And I kind of dislike what the national conversation around Brunson has become, because it's turned into this debate of, is he a 1A or not a 1A?
It's turned into bait. That's what it's turned into. It's turned into, yes, bait.
100%. When the reality is, we can just have a conversation about this dude who's just one of the best point guards in the NBA now. I mean, he's averaging 27 a game on ridiculous shooting numbers.
Mm-hmm.
He is about as good of like a bucket getter as pretty much anybody in the league. He is this elite level of three-level scorer.
Yes.
He can get anywhere on the court, and he's one of the best isolation players in the league. Because he takes these, his footwork is insane. And once he gets into the lane, you know, Tibbs said something to me once, which I thought was such an interesting point, and I can't unsee it, which was that his footwork is all post-ups done in reverse because they're face-ups. And it's really, it's all post-up footwork, but done in face-ups. And so he really is, in a lot of ways, this throwback 1990s power forward in the body of a point guard. And in a league where there isn't as much stylistic diversity as there used to be.
Right, right.
Watching a guy who's a 1990s power forward in the body of an undersized point guard can be quite fun to watch go for 30 points every other night.
That is so wild. I never thought of it, but now that you say it.
Yeah, you really can't unsee it once you see it. It's a really interesting perspective, and that's why Tibbs is there and we're here. And so
Don't tell him that. We have to have the high ground on Tibbs, because he will never let us forget it if we actually admit that he's good at something. I don't know about his relationship with you, but he would give me all types of shit if he knew I was actually giving him some ground, right? But
Brunson has been next level. He's been next level with his especially the 3-point shooting too.
Yep,
now that's really come on. He's having the best 3-point shooting of his career. He's really worked on taking deeper threes. I did a story earlier this year with his work that he's done working. The Knicks have this 4-point line on their practice court. And when he got to New York, he saw that and was like, I'm going to incorporate this into my offseason workouts. And he started working on that as a way to try to take deeper threes. And that's something he's implemented this year, where he's taking deeper threes now, and he's taking almost 7 threes a game and hitting 42%. And he's hit like multiples of deep threes this year from what he did last year. I mean, it's just not even close. He just didn't even take them. And now he's hitting 40 some odd percent on 27 plus foot threes. And it's an amazing development, changes their offense. When they run a pick and roll, he can just pull up from 28, which changes the way you have to guard him. Now, all of a sudden, defenses are more frantic. They're straying farther from the basket, which means more space for everybody else. Guys can get downhill more easily. It changes everything for them.
It changes the general outlook for them, because it adds a dimension that in playoff basketball is very hard to scout. It's hard to scout a guy who's going to shoot from not Steph Curry range, so to speak, but it's hard to scout a guy that you can't double and that you really can't scheme out of doing what he wants to do. Last thing before we go with Fred Katz. Fred, I don't know if the Knicks are trying to make another move. Like, I don't think that they're done. I think they can make a move like around the fringes, right? I think OG Anunoby, who is a free agent after this year, and very, of course, all the numbers that we said, says that they're going to keep him, right? But they have Evan Fournier's almost $19 million expiring deal, and the trade deadline is in about a week or so. He's clearly going to walk or try to find some other place of employment. Notice I said place of employment and not an NBA team. All right. He's going to try to find some other place to play. What do they do with that $18 or $19 million trade chip, considering where they are? And you don't know how the Eastern Conference is going to shake out. Is this the year that you push all your chips in the center of the table and say, we're not just going to be happy getting to the second round?
So, again, it depends on what happens with Randall coming back.
And that shoulder looked bad. I don't know if people saw it. That he fell directly onto that shoulder, and he tried his damnedest to pop that thing back in, because he's one of the toughest dudes alive, apparently. He wanted to pop that thing back in and just go right back out there, and that was not happening. So he went to the locker room, and then, of course, you get the tweets and a separated shoulder and everything. Like, dislocated shoulder. You know what I mean? It's a lot. But go ahead. My bad. Didn't mean to cut you off. Just wanted to.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I think it's because we don't know the diagnosis on Randall yet. It's hard to know exactly how that's going to affect their deadline. Because if Randall, let's say, hypothetically, is done for the year, you might see them operate differently in terms of the type of player that they're after. From everything that I've heard leading up to this point, what they want and it's what they need is a guy who can create offense when Jalen Brunson is off the floor. The thing with the Anunoby trade is it made them way better now. Their starting lineup is running people off the court. They've been awesome every time Anunoby's in the game with any iteration of lineup. When Brunson is out of the game, though, they really can't score. Right. The offense is like 11 or 12 points per 100 possessions worse when Brunson leaves. And the reason for that is because they lost two offensive creators, two guys who can go and get a bucket in Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett. And also two guys who were staples in their bench unit. You know, Barrett would stagger, so he would play with the bench unit. So a lot of his time came with Brunson off the floor. And you take those two guys out, and you put in McBride, who's young, and this is his first time having this kind of responsibilities in his career. And he's hitting threes, but he's not an organize the offense kind of guy. You know, it's a lot of dribbling. They get into their sets really late. That unit, when it succeeds offensively, does it because it's just getting a ton of stops because it's very good defensively. because it's getting a ton of stops and getting out in transition, and they're getting fast break buckets. And that's kind of how they're succeeding offensively. And it's the best way they can do it. They need somebody else who can facilitate. Doesn't necessarily have to be a point guard, but they could use somebody who could facilitate. So one thing that I could see them doing is flipping Fournier. They have all of their own first round picks. They also have four protected picks from other teams, including Dallas's this upcoming season, which is probably going to convey. And as of now, would be in the teens if it came over. And they got their own pick too. I could see them piecing together Fournier with a first. I know they've been actively taking calls on Quentin Grimes. I could see them throwing Quentin Grimes into a deal. You can combine him with Fournier to bring back a salary in the 20s. That's something that you could do.
Yeah.
And whoever they bring back, their preference for sure is not to bring back someone on an expiring contract, because what you have to remember is you have to remember the grand plan. And the grand plan is they want to trade for a star to join Jalen Brunson and OG Anunoby and the rest of the crew in New York. In order to do that, you need the salaries to be able to trade for that star so you can match salaries in a deal, because the Knicks are going to be over the salary cap for the pretty good future coming up.
Yep.
And what they want and what they value Fournier at is that he's at a nice tradable expiring number. And so what they want to do is they would want to ideally send out Fournier and bring back somebody who can make $20 million. So that way you can include that guy in a star trade this upcoming summer, and you pair him with somebody else, and that brings you up to 40 or whatever, and then you can get to your max money. And that's something that I know that is the preference, something that they're targeting. I don't think they're going to want to give up like Fournier and a first round pick and Grimes for somebody on an expiring.
Right.
I don't think that's going to be the case, with one exception. If there's somebody on an expiring, and I can't even for the life of me think of who this would be, so I just don't think it would happen. But if there's someone on an expiring who they think could be part of their future even more than Josh Hart or Dante DiVincenzo, then they could trade for that guy, plan on re-signing that guy, and then you include Hart or DiVincenzo in a star trade. But I don't think that's going to be the case, considering how valuable both those guys have been and how committed the organization seems to both those guys. I think that's their objective as of now. But again, if Randall has to miss significant time, then you might have to go a different direction. You might have to make two trades. You might have to trade for a different kind of guy. There are a bunch of different ways that the Knicks could go about this. They want to make another deal, though.
Yes.
Like, they don't want to make the deal. They don't think the deal is going to come till next summer. But they want to make another deal. They think this team is really good. And they have good reason to think it's really good.
Yeah,
like if stuff breaks right for them, they could win a couple playoff series. Like, they could do it. They won one last year. This team is better than last year's. The season ends today. They'd be playing Cleveland in the first round. They annihilated Cleveland in the first round last year, and that was without home court advantage, which they would have right now. You know, you mentioned Boston's three-point variance. It's also Boston's health. Who knows?
Good point, yes.
Who knows on the health on Porzingis? Who knows on the health of Al Horford? Who's also of the born to run generation, you know, like who knows on that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying they would beat Boston. I'm not saying I would pick them to beat Boston. I'm just saying that the organization feels like it can make a trade that would massively help this team without compromising the future. And I think that's what their target is right now. I don't see them giving up like a bunch of stuff for something good. Unless they think it's somebody who can, like, they're going to want somebody who they think they can flip in a star trade.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I could see it being like a Bruce Brown, who's got a team option for next year.
Yep.
Is rep by Def Row, as you would say, is a really good connector. He's not a shooter, so I understand the criticisms that, like, now you got a bench unit with him and a center and Josh Hart. And that could be problematic from a spacing perspective, but he's a really quick decision maker. He's a great screener. He's a great cutter. He's an awesome defender. He fits that mentality that we've been talking about. Like, Tibbs is not going to sour on Bruce Brown.
Right.
If anything, the issue is going to be like, oh no, Tibbs played Bruce Brown 32 minutes tonight. What's going on? You know, like I think somebody like that is I know they've been interested in him. Some other guys I know they've been interested in. if they can't get the guys who they want, I could see them just like doing like a second for your guy Alec Burks, who's under a different, I mean, he's an expiring, but like right. It's not like you're giving up a first
right
for Burks. It's not like you're giving up Quentin Grimes for Burks. You're giving up a second, maybe 2 seconds for Alec Burks, you know. Right. This is a different conversation.
Yeah, yeah, much different. Look, everybody in the Eastern Conference has a mortal sin. Everybody in the Eastern Conference has a path that you can see them getting to the finals and a path that you can see them getting knocked out in the second round, depending on the matchups. The New York Knicks are now in that conversation of being a very good team that is hoping to be great. My man, Fred Katz, I know he's at time. Fred, I really, really appreciate you, man, dropping the knowledge and coming on. And I didn't call you your birth name one damn time since we was here. I should get something extra for that.
I don't think you should. There are five people in the world who call me Matthew. Five. And it's my parents, you, Mitchell Robinson, and Isaiah Hartenstein.
Well,
And if anybody calls me Fred around Mitchell Robinson or Isaiah Hartenstein, they both correct them and say, no, it's Matthew, every time without fail.
See, I wouldn't do that to you in public, but I definitely call you
Matthew. Only on a podcast.
Well, I didn't say your name, and I didn't tell you to say your name to all the people who are listening today. That's your fault. Now, that, ladies and gentlemen, is Fred Katz. Don't forget to read some of his great coverage of the Knicks on The Athletic and also on the Katz and Shoot podcast on Patreon. Of course, make sure you pay for that. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who works very hard behind the scenes. Dan will be back for another episode of Divine Intervention tomorrow, and I will be back for another episode of The Good Word on Wednesday, where we will talk about all of these high scores and how this inflation is hurting the NBA. Yeah, but until then, everybody be safe.